Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Morena, David Slack, how's it going?
I'm very well, Johnny. Sorry about that. I went off for a nice stroll in the seaside village. Completely forgot that we'd arranged to get a chat this morning.
Well, it's a great day for it. Now, okay, so this morning we're chatting about NZ First Financial Markets Conduct of Institutions Amendment Duty to Provide Amendment Bill. And I just thought, obviously, you've written a piece about it and some of the political tactics currently being employed by New Zealand First and, I guess, broader, broadly speaking, conservative political figures. I just thought I'd give everyone a bit of background about this bill and kind of some of the discussion that's happening around it, and then maybe we can get your hot takes. David, does that sound all right to you?
By all means. Yeah.
Okay. So currently banks in New Zealand have the capacity to refuse banking services based on environmental or social concerns. For example, in recent years, we've slowly seen a decrease in banking services offered by the big banks toward fossil fuels and mining industries. NZ First have come out saying that this sort of decision-making should be illegal, and it should be illegal for banks to refuse services based on environmental or social concerns, hence their bill. Or their amendment bill, which would prevent denying services based on environmental, social, or governance criteria. They've been calling such frameworks woke ideology. And Peters argues that by removing these criteria, it would boost economic productivity. But critics warn that it is going to threaten environmental protections, and it also opens the door to political influence, and potentially industries would benefit by bypassing environmental oversight.
Yes.
Is that kind of like we're at with this?
It is. It is. And the essential point here is that it's head in the sand stuff, and
yep.
and it has been dramatized to good effect in the motion picture by the name of Don't Look Up,
yep.
Which I'm sure many of us have enjoyed, and well, enjoyed with a feeling of looming doom, because, you know, it really well captures the whole idea that because people find it inconvenient that the climate crisis requires us to make changes, that they find it so inconvenient that they prefer to pretend it doesn't exist. And that's what is actually being argued for here, because when the banks do this kind of thing, they are simply following a lead that a lot of more progressive and forward-looking businesses are now doing across the world, and that is to say, look, let's just imagine for a moment, 10, 15 years from now, we have even more extreme weather, even more extreme hardship, and millions of people on the move because of the dislocation this is all going to create. What do we think that's going to do to the economy? Is it all going to be tickety-boo, or is it going to start to look a bit pear-shaped? And, of course, the answer is crisis, disaster, very great difficulty. And at that point, your financial returns can begin to fall. So just on a simple prudential financial basis of saying we want to protect the economy, all of these businesses, including the banks and their lending policies, are saying what would be the sustainable, responsible thing to do here? It would be to steer economic activity away from the stuff that's causing this problem.
Yes.
And what is causing the problem? It is emissions, and those emissions are from burning fossil fuels. So, you know, none of this, despite what Winston Peters would like you to believe, is being done because people are woke and virtue signaling and all of those other phrases that they like to use. It's because we have a problem. And what I wrote about this yesterday was, because one of the phrases he used in his press release about it, announcing the bill that they're proposing, is that this is being pursued by unelected globalist climate radicals. That's what he's calling bankers who are doing sensible things. And what I wrote was, you say climate radical, Winston, I say someone who's trying to get us out of the careening car before it reaches the cliff. And
yes.
I went on to say, you know who also qualifies under the terms you're laying out here as unelected globalist climate radicals? Insurance company actuaries, that's who. And I said, you know, take a look at what's coming out of Florida right now. Insurance companies are telling people there that they cannot give them a cover on their house because of what the climate crisis is doing to the risk tables. And yes. I said, you know, if you've ever met an insurance actuary, you'll find that they are absolutely not the kind of hippie, commie, woke sort that Winston wants to evoke in his press releases. What you've got here are people being realistic and coming up with constructive solutions. And what anybody like Winston Peters or Shane Jones is doing when they write in their press releases that this is woke ideology hijacking business, what they are doing is putting their head in the sand and pretending that our problems don't exist. They do exist, they're profound, and we've got to act on them.
David, do you think Winston Peters truly believes in the culture war rhetoric he uses, or is it more of a strategic political tool?
Strategic political tool. For 40 years now, I've been watching him doing this stuff. He looks at what's being effective, what's being deployed in the game of politics, because it has always been, to some extent, a game for him. I don't know why, really. I think he used to love politics. He used to love rugby. He was quite a handy player, by all accounts. I think he just sees this as a kind of a rugby you can go on doing while you're wearing a double-breasted suit.
Yes.
And, on and on he has gone, and he's had a high old time for 40 years. But to hell with that, we've got bigger fish to fry. We've got fish that are frying in the water because it's heating up is the problem. And so there's no room for this kind of stuff. So I did write yesterday, actually, that, you know, what you're seeing here is a pattern that repeats itself very often. I sort of drew a comparison with the way things used to be 30 years ago when all our TV arrived about 2 years after it had been a hit in America. And you'd watch the Oscars and they'd talk about movies and you'd never even heard of them. And in a way, what you've got here is people like Shane Jones and Winston Peters and Sean Plunkett and Bob McCroskey, all of those kind of people, they keep wheeling out, Seymour too, keep wheeling out these phrases that were being used in America 3 and 5 years ago when they were fresh and imaginative. These guys do not have a single fresh idea of their own. They watch what happens in conservative reactionary politics in America and they say, oh, that works, we'll use it here too. And they bolt it on to what's being done here in Aotearoa, which sometimes has comparisons with America, but very often doesn't, and it just jars, but on they go, and they rattle down the road with this crap, and it really is so wearying.
Is there any difference between New Zealand's right-wing populism and the American vision?
We've got the religious dimension in America.
Yes.
That kind of says Jesus wants us to do that. And it's the weirdest, most hateful, most vengeful kind of Jesus you might ever imagine, but you know, they happily do it anyway. So, you know, you do have that kind of apocalyptic dimension to them that you don't have here. But what you do have in common is it's a kind of a patriarchal mid-20th century father knows best kind of disposition to everything. They've got that in common, that's for sure. It's, you know, it's old people who can't, no, older people who don't like the fact that the world is changing and they sense that it's leaving them behind. It's a reminder of their mortality, I suspect, and they don't like it. Well, none of us do. But you got to get with the program, Johnny.
Yes.
You got to understand that we're here for a short time, a miracle. All of us are winners at once. At one time in the world, we all won a sperm race. take comfort in that.
Now, one last question. Obviously, should this New Zealand First bill pass, could the bill impact New Zealand's international reputation, particularly in terms of climate leadership and Indigenous partnerships?
Yeah, in both of those respects, it would reflect badly on us. It would certainly not stand alone, of course. There's a whole lot of other stuff going on, not the least of it being, of course, Seymour's Treaty Principles Bill. Everything that this coalition government is pursuing looked retrograde and a denial of what progressive and enlightened democracies have been embracing for the last 30 years.
And, yeah, I guess I'd seen a bit of coverage saying that our actual policy around these, the environmental, social and governance criteria is actually, you know, is really good. And a lot of countries, including Australia, are going to implement policy which will be stronger than what we currently have. So, I mean, Australia is a mining country, and they're about to implement criteria which is stronger than what currently exists in New Zealand. So for us to go backwards seems ludicrous.
And it is worth bearing in mind that, you know, we do have, for all that there's a drift to populism and authoritarianism, there is in very substantial pockets of even those countries, but also in Western democracies across Europe, an absolute conviction that this is the way to go, and an awful lot of momentum for it, an awful lot of momentum within businesses to do this. For all kinds of good reasons, but also crucially that one I said at the top, that you know, if we don't act, we've got a we've got a huge crisis coming down the road, and it just makes no financial sense to ignore it.
Yes. All right. Hey, David Slack, thank you so much for a very interesting edition of Political Commentary. We'll catch up with you in a couple of weeks' time, mate.
Terrific. Cheers, Tony.
You just heard a bit of Political Commentary.